This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello everybody, my name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And I'm Greg Gazin.
And all three of us are here today. How you guys doing?
Awesome.
Doing well.
So what are we talking about? What are we doing here, all three of us?
Well, what we're finding is that we're starting to do a lot more podcasts now that there's actually three of us on board. And I was thinking, you know, this time of the year, end of the year, beginning of a new year, I thought, well, why don't we just reflect back on maybe what we did this year, what we learned this year? Of course, Toastmasters related or otherwise.
Of course. I think that's a wonderful idea. And so did Ryan. And that's why we're all here. So who wants to kick it off with their story? Nobody wants to kick it off with their story. So therefore, I nominate Ryan, because Ryan always has incredibly interesting stories.
Oh, geez.
I agree.
Ain't nothing like setting them up for a disappointment.
Hey, folks, this is going to be the most exciting story you've ever heard in your life. Go, Ryan.
Right. So I've been thinking about what have I learned from Toastmasters this year? And I guess maybe you could file this under a cautionary tale. I belong to an advanced club. Bo is a member of that club as well. And we've been members for quite a long time now. And this club has got a real legacy in the district. In fact, I think if you look over the membership list over the past years, it reads like a who's who for people in the district. People who've gone on to compete in World Championship of Public Speaking, past district officers. This club has really just been an incredible club over the years. Well, I think, Bo, you'd agree with me that things have gotten a little bit stagnant over the past year or so. We've lost some of our members. Our membership has gone down. I think some of the lesson there is that you got to stick to the fundamentals, and you can't rest on your laurels from your past successes. You got to keep that edge. So the club is now in a place where we've been on track for President's Distinguished, year after year, and we're probably there in terms of the educational awards, but not in terms of the membership. So I think this principle holds true in any aspect of life. Whether it's in the workplace, maybe you're a manager or an individual contributor, in your family, it comes down to what have you done for me lately? You got to keep contributing. And I think, for example, in the area of your family, you can't just take a vacation once a year and then check out the rest of the year and say, hey, I'm a great dad. Remember we did that vacation? Same thing with your Toastmasters club. You can't keep coming back to, oh, well, we had this person as a member and we had this many educational awards. If you're not still, like I said, keeping that edge, then things are just going to unfortunately dwindle.
So Ryan, let me ask you this. Why do you think, or do you think we've lost our edge at the club? And if so, what are some of the factors?
Well, I think there's another aspect to this, and I think you'd agree with me on this, Bo. We reached a point where we were losing some of our members. And what is that old Woody Allen quote? That restaurant. I don't know if it was a restaurant or what it was, but.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a member someplace where they would accept me.
Oh, no, not that one.
Oh.
I know. Yeah, I would never be a member of a club that would accept me as a member.
And that sounds appropriate for our club, too.
Yeah. No, the one I'm thinking of has to do with my goodness, it's not Woody Allen. It's the baseball player there. Help me out, guys.
The baseball, Yogi Berra?
Yeah, Yogi Berra, exactly. So it was the great Yogi Berra who said, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. Right. And our club, I think, ran into a similar situation where we had members who were leaving the club, and they were saying they're leaving because the members who've been there the longest, the people that they could learn the most from, are leaving. And right. So therefore, I'm going to leave too. Well, what I think those members weren't realizing is that they were doing the same thing that the members before them had done when they left.
Right.
So, and thankfully, I know, Bo, you were part of the solution on this and reaching out into some of those members and convincing them that there's a time when the student needs to become the teacher, right?
Yes.
That, you know, with any group that you join or become a part of, there's a time when you're a member of that group and you're really on the receiving end and you're taking, not necessarily in a negative sense, but, you know, you're getting fed, you're absorbing the information and the benefit of the group. But then there's a point where, you know, you need to mature along that continuum and you become the teacher, the one who's mentoring others. And you may not see yourself as getting as much from that, but we all know that, you know, when we give, we get, you know, even if it's just improving in terms of your mentoring skills and that sort of thing.
Do you know how I got those members to come back?
Bribery.
I made them an offer they couldn't refuse.
Actually, The Godfather, it's up on Netflix, I see. So that might be something to watch.
Well, I did, and that's why I've been quoting The Godfather a lot lately.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I just watched one. I need to watch 2 and 3.
You know, Ryan, you brought up a good point. Sometimes I find that quite often there's an emphasis on the guests and the new members, but yet sometimes we forget about the people that have been around for a while. You know, what's keeping them motivated? What's keeping them going? And they get forgotten. And sometimes they don't say anything. Some of them are not necessarily self-motivated and they leave.
Hmm. Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. I think one thing that can come into play here, I'm the treasurer of the club. I'm not, you know, I'm not the president this year, but I don't know that our club has ever done this, and maybe it is the time to do the Moments of Truth module. Have you guys ever been a part of that?
No.
Yeah, we try to do it. We try to do it every year, and what's even better now, of course, is that module is now free. You can actually get that free. You can download it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So for those who aren't familiar with it, it's an opportunity for a club to kind of look at the fundamentals and sort of give yourself a progress report. How are we doing and what do we need to do to improve? And I've been a part of a couple of clubs who've done that, and both times it's been a valuable exercise for sure.
It's a really good pulse check for the club. And what we try to do typically is we'll pair up a senior member or a more advanced member with a junior member, because it's a good exercise for both of them. It's also a good mentor-mentee. It's a good mentor-mentee educational.
Right.
Cool. All right. Well, why don't I go next? Because I'm sure Greg's story is amazing, and we're going to want to end with that one.
Okay, go for it.
All right. So I think what I've learned this past year, and maybe this is something that's been building up in the last couple of years, or maybe it's just I'm getting kind of cranky in my old age. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But I kind of started to realize that I've been becoming more direct in my evaluations. And Ryan, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I do.
Now, I was going to talk about some of the factors that are actually associated with a more direct evaluation. And I think there's just some interesting things there, but it's nothing groundbreaking or nothing that's really life-changing. For example, if you do have say like a smaller club or a smaller audience, you're going to be more likely to be open and say things that you wouldn't in a larger audience. If you have a better relationship with the person that you're evaluating, you're more likely to give them, you know, more honest or evaluation. For example, like if I'm evaluating Ryan, I'm not going to hold back. You know, I'm not going to say anything. And I know that Ryan and I have a really good relationship. So if there's anything even mildly offensive, we could talk about it after, and it's not going to be any big deal. It also has to do with your mood. You know, sometimes if people are just in bad moods, then you're more likely to give a harsher evaluation. And if you're in a good mood, the same thing, the opposite, you're more likely to give a better evaluation. So there's a lot of different factors that actually play into the kind of evaluations that you give and the kind of evaluations that you hear other people give. But I've been thinking a lot about the whole evaluation process, taking it kind of out of the Toastmasters context and putting it just more in the life context, like giving people feedback on anything in life. And And there is sort of this conflict between what really works well and what we should do in Toastmasters. And I say that there's this conflict because what we do in Toastmasters, the whole sandwich method, that does work well, but it isn't always the best solution. And I'll give you a couple examples. First, in Toastmasters, you don't want to be so direct that you offend somebody and you scare off all the new members. Because obviously, you know, if somebody, we've been Toastmasters for a long time. We've obviously been in clubs where some person that has very little diplomacy skills will come out and give like this really incredibly harsh evaluation. Maybe it's accurate or maybe it's way over the top. It really doesn't matter. The point is, everybody's kind of in shock that they just heard this.
And, oh yeah, I've seen those.
Oh yeah. And then the person is like, you know, tears might be coming down their eyes. And all of the guests and the new members get this fear, like, wow, I don't ever want to go through that. I better not give any speeches. So generally it's not a good thing to do for the benefit of the club. And because we want an open environment where people could be comfortable in doing their best and going out there and trying new things. Although those are sometimes the kind of things that are subject to a harsh evaluation. However, if, and you guys could probably just realize this from experience, when somebody, let me give you a story. Let me go back one step. When I was working at the data center, this was probably like 6 or 7 years ago, I was at my peak weight. I weighed 225 pounds or something like that, because I was involved in this routine where I was just constantly going to the data center. I never had time to exercise and I just kept on eating. So one of the guys who worked with me one day, he just looked at me, tapped me on my gut and said something like, what are you hiding under that sweater, Bo? What is that? What the heck is going on here? You know, and I remember thinking I was so like in shock. I was so like offended in a way, like what a jerk, who would ever say that? But it was that strong emotion, you know, that stuck with me for days, like, oh my goodness. I looked in the mirror and I'm like, what is going on? And it was that really strong emotion, that like offensive type of remark that made me just completely take a 180 and start reevaluating my diet and my exercise and so forth. So it was a really good thing overall, and it made me want to change. So it's sometimes those kind of comments that are incredibly effective. But again, putting those into use in a Toastmasters environment or anywhere really, you have to balance the level of diplomacy with the effectiveness of the comment. And I know some people will argue that, well, you could be very diplomatic and be effective as well. And yes, I agree to a point. But sometimes it really is that emotional appeal, that emotional tug that really does the trick. So my overall message is think about your evaluations. Think about the setting in which you're giving the evaluation, the person to whom you're giving the evaluation, the relationship. Think about all those factors and then decide how critical you actually want to get or how diplomatic you want to be.
The guy who tapped you on the belly there, is he someone who was particularly concerned about health and fitness? Was he trying to motivate you or was he just kind of ribbing you for letting yourself go a little bit?
He was just being a I can't say that, can I?
I was also wondering how you took it, because if you took it very badly or very personally, not necessarily as a learning experience, but more of a, oh yeah, this guy's a real jerk, would your philosophy be the same?
Yeah, that's a great point too. It depends on how you take criticism. If you're the type who separates the person giving the evaluation from the evaluation itself, you're going to do better with that information. However, if you look at the person and say, I don't like that person, therefore his evaluation is invalid. Well, basically that's a fallacy. That's fallacious thinking. And you're not going to do as well with that evaluation, with that information.
What I try to do sometimes is if I find we have the odd member that basically does the same thing all the time. Mm. And I won't go into detail about it. So I basically took him aside and I try to explain that to him. He says, well, that's just the way I am. And I said to him, I said, you do realize as a senior member of the club, people are watching you. And so if you're doing these things, people are thinking, oh, it's okay to do it. He goes, oh yeah, I never thought of it that way. So sometimes using a different context as opposed to going directly to the person and say, you this, you that, it's like saying, look at what kind of impact you're having on other people. Right. And that, the light went on. Now, we'll see if that makes a change. I don't know. I haven't heard him speak since.
Yeah. All right, Greg, it's your turn. Go for it.
It's my turn. Well, I don't know how deep and profound I'm going to be, but what happened to me this year, and that's actually the last half of the year, I guess. Yeah, I guess it would be the last half of the year, is that I decided to compete in speech contests. Now, I've been a Toastmaster for almost 13 years. I hadn't competed since the first year. And of course, for the most of the last, good chunk of the last decade, I wasn't eligible to compete. I wasn't really going to compete, but my past president and vice president of education, let's call it, they shamed me into competing. They go, oh, you know, Greg, you got to give back. You got to show blah, blah, blah. And I thought, okay, fine. Ironically, I ended up taking the core of a speech that I gave in my first year as a Toastmaster at the Humor Speech Contest. Huh. Nevertheless, I decided that I was going to do it. I went all the way to the district level. I came in third. We have over 290 clubs. But that isn't the big thing. A couple of things I learned from this is that what I found is that as I started to shift from focusing more on the communication side of Toastmasters to the leadership side, you find that maybe you just don't spend as much time preparing and practicing and fine-tuning. And it's not that you become lax. It's more as a result, you're just kind of too busy. I mean, when you're a district governor or lieutenant governor of education and training or what have you, you don't necessarily have the time that you don't necessarily have the time to put in that you would do with the speech contest. What I discovered with this speech is that I probably gave it 200 times. I visited probably over a dozen clubs. And what's also interesting is that the speech, when I first gave it at the club level, looked totally different from the final one at the district. And my speech title was called Much Ado About Gadgets. So I think you can probably guess what it was about. Can you?
Oh, we can.
Oh, you can.
Mr. Gadget Guy.
Well, it'll be up on YouTube shortly if it's not already there, and it'll also be on the, it'll be up on YouTube shortly. But what I discovered was that this process, it forced me to practice and rehearse. It forced me to really go through and take the evaluations that I got, because I did get a significant number of evaluations, to go through them and really put things to heart. And it's amazing sometimes how much more difficult it is to put something into 7 minutes than it is to do a 20 or 30 minute speech or a keynote of that nature. The other thing that I found interesting is that because a lot of people got to know me over my years as Toastmasters, and also you're always front and center when you're on the district leadership team, is that people were watching me. And I didn't really realize that until people came up to me and sort of saying, well, that's very inspiring. Oh, maybe I think I might try to take on a humorous speech. I've also heard people say, Greg, I never thought you were funny, but now I changed my mind about that. Oh, come on, guys. That was your choice. That was your chance to say something.
Yeah, of course, I was thinking, I hope they were laughing with you, not at you.
Oh, you know what? I'm at the point where it
it doesn't matter. A laugh's a laugh, right?
It doesn't
we'll
really
take it
matter,
where we can get them.
It was interesting because I was really forced to go through the process. And I was nervous getting up there. I couldn't believe it. I was so nervous getting up on the big stage. And it's like, wow, all of a sudden, you know, you've got your whole life just flashing in front of you, your all your years of Toastmasters, all the speeches you gave, all the people that gave you feedback. And that's just going, that's playing fast forward in your brain. But it was a great exercise. And I'm really, really glad I did it. And again, it took a lot of time. I'm sure I spent over 100 hours. And I think for some people, maybe that find that they've been there, they've done that for Toastmasters, you know, because sometimes you find in some of the clubs, there are people that kind of just show up. It's almost become more of a social gathering for them rather than a continuous learning experience. And for me, I'm always about lifelong learning because I can always improve. But I found that this exercise really gave me a different perspective on things. Plus, it also inspired others, which again, it's no longer a leadership issue. It's a different type of leadership issue. All of a sudden, people seeing what you're doing, what you can do. People have asked me about the process I went through. And there is one of our division governors, unfortunately, probably heard my speech 7 or 8 times. And he even commented about how it changed from the beginning to where it ended. I didn't win. I came in 3rd, but that's okay. When you think about, I think we've got 6,000 plus members in our district. I think I did okay.
I think so too. Congratulations.
So that was the big thing. So I want to encourage people, go for it.
Yeah, what I think is great about that too is that you talked about how nervous you were getting up there to do it. And to some people listening might think, geez, Greg's been a member for 13 years. I'm surprised he would be nervous. But what's wonderful is that by taking on that challenge, you're able to sort of relive the experience of being a new member in Toastmasters and giving your first speech. And the reason for that is, just like you said, the stakes are higher now. You have been a member for so long. People have looked up to you that now you're probably feeling that additional pressure as you take the stage, that not only do you want to do well for your, you know, for yourself and whatnot, but that people are watching and, hey, this is Greg. He's a DTM several times over. He should be good. Right? I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but I imagine that's part of the equation here.
Well, you're worried. You're worried about getting up there and actually forgetting your words. Or the biggest thing is, at some point, you need to stop making changes. In fact, what would happen is you have this whole process in your head. And so all of a sudden you've prepared and you've given this speech, you know, 30, 40, 50, 100 times, and you make a change. So what ends up happening is that you're up there speaking, and then at one point it goes, okay, which road do I take? And so there were actually a couple of changes I had made in the last week that I ended up backing out. So my philosophy now is that at least a week before, stop making any changes. It doesn't matter. Just stop making any changes. The other thing you have to do is also realize that when you're getting feedback from people, some of it you can accept and others you have to say, well, you know, that's not really what I was trying to say. And sometimes that's hard as well.
Yeah. Realizing that when you get feedback, a lot of times the feedback is contradictory. You'll hear two completely different things from two different people. So you have to be the one that decides which way is best for you in your speech.
Absolutely.
Hey, Greg, help me out with my listening comprehension and math skills. When you were first talking about the preparation that went into this, I think you said you gave the speech about 200 times to a dozen clubs. So does that mean?
Oh yeah, okay.
A dozen clubs. Have you heard your speech 16 times?
No, my front window.
That includes rehearsals in your own. The privacy.
Rehearsals, recordings. I would record it and play it back. I would go. I would take a walk. I would walk and I would practice. Of course, you got people looking at you funny.
Yeah.
But there were times where I would probably do it maybe 10 times, 15 times a day. And then you just got to stop because all of a sudden people are saying, Greg, enough. But it's also amazing that the clubs are happy to have you. In fact, I went to a few clubs. I would call around to see if you had any openings. And it's amazing. I went to one club where they actually had 2 speakers that both canceled on them. And one of them, I just showed up at the club because I couldn't get a hold of anybody.
And then you're able to give it twice.
No, just once. Oh. But it's interesting. One of the clubs was the university club. And it's a different audience. It's a much younger audience. And I had 1 or 2 little takeaways from there. Because you got to balance it out. Because you never know, for example, who the judges are. And you don't know who the audience is. I mean, I have an idea as to what the makeup of our attendees at our conference are. We usually get 300, 350 people at our conferences, and I would probably say about 50 are usually first timers, but there's that core group and you know who they are. So you want to try to make sure that you appeal to them, but also appeal to the masses as well. So if you were giving it to a group that was primarily students, the take would be a little bit different. Some of the references didn't go over as well, and some of them went over really well, especially the real gadgety techie ones, and the Shakespeare that went over well. Shakespeare went over quite well with everybody.
All right. Well, I think this has been a lot of fun. We should do it again sometime, guys.
Same time next year.
Maybe even more. We'll see. We'll see how our listeners like this episode. All right, guys. Well, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks, and have a happy new year.
Happy new year.
Happy new year. Happy new year to everybody out there. Keep listening.
Happy New Year to everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.